Hey, you guys, welcome back to my Flickers of Fear show. I'm so happy to be finally getting around to doing this movie because this has got to be one of my favorite horror films of the 2010s. And I feel like I don't really see that many people talking about it, which is kind of a shame. I first saw this, I think back in summer of 2016, maybe it was a little bit later than that. And I was just like blown away by this is a fucking bonkers movie. And just kind of like the whole atmosphere of it, just the whole, everything about it, like really just pulled me in and like intrigued me. And this is one of those movies, and this doesn't happen that often, I have to say. This is one of those movies that after I was done watching it, like I immediately went and wanted to watch like other videos about it, like explaining it and other kind of things, because this movie has kind of a weird, like surrealist type of shit going on in it. And I think there is actually something going on there, but it is very like nightmarish and very like dream logic. So I don't know. I don't know if it's better to just like watch it and just kind of just let it wash over you as though it was a nightmare, or if you should try to like interpret it symbolically. I mean, I think you can enjoy it really either way, but this is a movie that really is, it's one of those ones that kind of rewards repeated watching. So I really liked to, I was really happy to watch this one a second time, because like I said, it's been a couple years since I've seen it, and it was one that I saw a couple years ago and it really, really stuck with me. So this movie is called Baskin, and it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival, I believe in fall of 2015. Now this is a Turkish film, and it's actually the feature-length directorial debut of a guy named Can Evrenol. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that at least sort of right. I'm just saying this, obviously I'm not Turkish, so I'm sure I'm going to butcher like a bunch of names in it, so I'm apologizing in advance. So the title Baskin, at least according to Google Translate, the most common translation is raid, but it also means things like incursion or foray. It means things like that. So it has like a lot of different definitions, which I think is really interesting because pretty much any of those definitions could apply to what's going on in this movie. This movie, it's like picture if, it's really weird because it's kind of like the first half is this really creepy, dreamlike, surrealist, dread-inducing, you know, thing where it's just everything is just so, like a portent of doom kind of thing. And it's just like, it just builds up and builds up. Gorgeous, like cinematography, like the way it's shot is really, really awesome. Like the lighting and everything, it's all at night. There's no day shots. And then like right at about the halfway point, like right at about 45, 50 minutes, it goes full on fucking gore fest. So it's kind of like I said, imagine if David Lynch directed a Zoroastrian version of Hellraiser, and then maybe you're kind of getting there. Can Evrenol actually said that some of his Hellraiser was a big influence, Clive Barker stuff in general. He said also The Descent, the caving movie, that brilliant British movie. Also Apocalypse Now, which actually wouldn't, I don't know if that would have occurred to me necessarily, but when he said that, in the interview, I was kind of like, oh, okay, I see it. I see what you're doing there. But yeah, so I can definitely see. Now, I will say that there might be, because I've seen some kind of reviews of this where people were just like, they really, really liked it, but they're like, what the fuck did I just watch? Like, what did it all mean? And I do feel like, I'm not sure if this is the case, and maybe if anyone knows more about Turkish culture than I do, you can tell me. I do feel like maybe some of the stuff that doesn't carry over, doesn't translate as well, might simply be a case of people like Americans or whoever's watching this being not that familiar with Turkish folklore or mythology, because I do kind of feel like there's a lot of that going on. And I actually did see a couple of videos where it was pointing out a couple of things that were in the movie that were specifically referencing some Turkish superstitions or folklore or something like that. So there actually is a lot of that going on. So what ended up happening with this was that Can Evrenol had made a short film, I think back in 2013, of the same name, and it essentially had the same story, But I guess he was showing it at like some horror convention or something, and somebody like, and he got kind of talked into, man, you should like make that into like a full length feature because that's fucking awesome. So he actually did end up doing this. It cost $350,000 to make. They shot it in 28 days. He was talking about, I was reading this one interview with him, and he said they shot it over 28 nights, really, because like I said, there are no day shots. It's all nighttime. And he's like, in a lot of the places that we shot, and he's like, we shot in Istanbul, and he's like, and we didn't have permits, or we weren't really sure how solid like the permits were, and he's like, because of the nature of the stuff they were filming, there's like a lot of gore, there's a lot of naked people, a lot of nudity and weird sexual shit going on, so he's like, you know, we were really like constantly afraid that we were gonna get caught, you know, that somebody was gonna like come in and raid the place and like fucking, you know, shut them down and everything. But thankfully that did not happen, and then this movie came out. I kind of first heard about this, I don't remember where I heard it, but like I said, periodically I go through these lists of like, you know, best horror nobody's seen, and honestly this one, I don't think it's on there anymore, but when I first watched this one, it was on Netflix, but it always came up, you know, I guess as it does, it came up sort of near the bottom of the search, you know what I mean, because it's like, it's foreign or whatever. But I had seen like a couple recommendations for it on like various horror sites, and I was like, man, you gotta see this. So I definitely went and watched it, and I was really, really not sorry. I do not think it's on Netflix anymore, at least in the United States. I actually watched it. It said, it's weird because I did a search and it said it was on Hulu, but I have Hulu and I couldn't find it on there. I actually ended up just watching it. I think I rented it from Google Play or Microsoft something or whatever. Like, but you can rent it like various places. And I think you can also buy it on like a nice Blu-ray that have, because I was watching a review of it from Bloodbath and Beyond, that channel, and they had the Blu-ray of it. And that actually also has the short film on it as well, which they actually liked better than the full length one. But like I said, I haven't seen the short film, so I don't really know. So this movie, like I said, it's so, it's batshit insane, okay? One thing. Two, in the third act, like the second half of it, once, you know, it starts going in that way, some of the gore and stuff like that is pretty extreme. Not in the sense of, oh, there's blood splattered everywhere. I mean, there is, but just some of the stuff that happens is real grody, like real uncomfortable to watch. So if you're real squeamish, I would not recommend this any way, shape, or form. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but some of the shit that happens in it is pretty fucked up. So if you can't handle gore or, you know, close up kind of, because the special effects in this are unsettlingly good, you know, so if that's gonna bother you, I maybe watch like the first half and then turn it off, because after it gets about the 45-50 minute mark, it's gonna start getting real, real gross. So you might just want to tune out, but I'm just warning you ahead of time, it's like a trigger warning. It does get actually really nasty toward the end. So okay, so what we have, the very beginning of it, and like I said, the first half of this I just fucking love, and I can't even put my finger on what it is, but I fucking love there's every single thing that happens in this movie, even if it seems on the surface to be like innocuous, every single thing has like a portent of doom. Everything is ominous. And it's really, really, and even if you're not entirely sure what the fuck is going on, it's just everything has this kind of like just dripping with dread. And it's just so awesome, like the way it's set up. So the first scene of it is like, there's actually like a little kid, and he's in bed or whatever, and he hears something, and he goes out into the living room, and like the TV is on, but it's all static. And then he looks back toward his own room, and like the light in the room like turns red, and he's like flipping out. And like, I guess he hears his mom and somebody like having sex in their bedroom or something, and he's like pounding on the door, but they won't open it. So this first part, you don't find out until later on, but this first part is actually like a recurring nightmare that one of our main characters has. So after this opening, which is, like I said, is really, really great. It's super, super creepy, just like the way it's set up. And so after that, we're introduced to our main characters. And these are five cops, and they're all friends. And their names are Remzi, who's kind of like, they call him Boss Remzi, so I guess he's kind of like the highest ranking or the one in charge. Arda, who is the young rookie He's the youngest of them. He's just joined the force, apparently. And he's also, you find out later, a grown-up version of the kid that we saw in the original. So he's the one that was having that recurring nightmare. There's a dude named Yavuz, who's kind of like the loudmouth of the group. He's always kind of like coming up with these crazy ass stories, and he's real like tough guy, but he comes across as like real insensitive, or not insensitive, insecure. So when somebody like laughs at him, or he perceives that somebody has laughed at him, he gets like all tough, but he's also kind of a coward. There's also Apo and Safi. Now, all of them are there. You know, there's this little restaurant like out in the middle of nowhere, and they're all sitting there. Apparently, they're having their shift meal or dinner or whatever, and they're all sitting there like shooting the shit. They're talking about gambling. And then they pretty much they very quickly like go into this conversation about fucking a chicken, and then 70% of all Turkish men lose their virginity to animals, and it's all this other kind of situation. And then Yavuz tells this story about picking up a sex worker that looked like a Victoria's Secret model, like just walking down the street, and then getting home and finding out that she was actually a man, and then just like having sex with her anyway, because why not? They were already there. And so there's this whole like thing going on. So they're all kind of like shooting the shit. And like I said, even this, where they're all just like joking with each other and betting on soccer matches and stuff, it's like, it might seem like their conversation, like I said, is innocuous or just, you know, just kidding around. But every single thing that's said either says something about each dude's personality or foreshadows something that happens later on. This is why I think this is one of those movies that I could see myself like watching again and again, just trying to pick stuff up, because it seems like everything in this kind of means something or kind of like relates to something that happens later on. Now, while they're all hanging out, the one guy, Safi, he's kind of been like sitting away from the others, and he seems like he's not feeling too good. Like he's like, oh man, I have this horrible headache and all this other kind of shit. And they're asking him, you know, if it's gone away. He's like, no, it's, you know, he still feels like crap, right? And they don't really know why. And so this whole thing happens where like the waiter comes over and he overhears part of Yavuz's, prostitute story, and the waiter laughs, at which point Yavuz gets all like upset, and he's just kind of like, what the fuck are you laughing at? Are you saying I'm gay and all this other kind of stuff? And so then they kind of like start a whole fight and everything. So while they're in the middle of that, Safi actually like gets up and like puts his hand over his mouth like, oh man, I'm gonna like barf, and like runs into the bathroom. Now while he's in the bathroom, and while the rest of the guys are kind of like, there's this sort of tussle going on out in the main restaurant between them and the waiter, and then like the waiter's dad or the owner of the restaurant or whatever, so Safi's in the bathroom and he barfs all over the sink, and then he notices that there's a frog in the soup dish, which he thinks is really weird. And like I said, that doesn't sound creepy, but it's creepy, like, in the movie. And so he's just kind of like, what the fuck? There's, like, a fucking frog. And then, like, he leans down and he's kind of, like, washing his face, and it looks like there might be, maybe, a hooded figure behind him, like, in the mirror, but you can't really see it clearly, and it's like, maybe it's just the thing on the wall, you can't really see it. And then he basically looks in the mirror and screams, at which point, like, all the other guys come running and be like, dude, what the fuck is going on? And he basically says something to them about, it's like, oh, I just felt like losing my mind for a second. Now, he says he's feeling better. All of them kind of get their shit together after the little fight with the waiter or whatever, and they're just kind of like, okay, we're going to go back in the van. Now, Safi, even though he's just thrown up everywhere and said he was losing his mind, he's like, I'm going to drive. And everybody's like, bro, no, you're not going to. But he insists. He's like, you know, you're not, I'm fine. You know, I can drive. I've been driving since I was 4 years old, he says. So they all get in the cop van and kind of go out. And like I said, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, so it looks like maybe not much is going on around here. And so they're all just kind of like hanging out. You know, they turn a song on the radio and they're all kind of singing along, and it's kind of this big happy thing. Then all of a sudden they get a call over the radio. Now, there's apparently this other cop unit, and they are calling for backup in this place called, and I know I'm going to pronounce this wrong, like, it looks like, It's spelled I-N-C-E-A-G-A-C. You know, I'm not really sure how you even pronounce that in English, but I was trying to listen to how they were saying it in the movie, and it almost sounds like they're saying, like, in Josh or something like that. And I know that's probably really wrong, but that was, like, closer than what I would have attempted. But, yeah, so they get a call for that place, and they're like, okay, we need somebody here for backup because there's some shit going on. So they're all kind of, like, uneasy about this. They're like, yeah, I've heard of that place. It's around here. And they said they'd heard a bunch of, like, nasty stories about it, like, when they were kids. Like, there was almost, like, weird legends about it or some shit. But they weren't real specific about what they were. And and then they also say something about there being a bunch of shrines there. And then they're like, well, that doesn't make any sense, though, that there are all there's shrines there. But then there's, like, all these nasty stories about it. Like, which is it? And then it almost comes to a thing, like, Safi is driving, and he's like, look, I've driven on this road for 10 years, and he's like, then and I'm driving, and I kind of don't know where I'm at now, and it's like, there should be a right turn, like, going to the place where we're supposed to go, but it's not there. So it's almost kind of like they're lost, even though it's an area that they're very, very familiar with. And then Safi sees what appears to be a buck naked man running across the road, like, in front of the van. And he's just like, what the fuck was that? So it's like, he stops, but none of the other guys see it. And they're just like, are you high? What the fuck? It's like, we told you couldn't drive, you know, cause you were sick or whatever. And so they get out of the van and they can't find anybody. And then, like, on the side of the van, there's, like, all these weird, like, scratches that almost kind of look like letters or symbols or something like that, but not really. It's kind of, like, not very clear. And they're like, man, I'm pretty sure that wasn't there before. And then they look out, like, on the side of the road, and there's all these frogs, and they're like, what the fuck? And then they start, like, teasing Safi. He's like, oh, maybe it was a bunch of frogs, like, jumped together into the shape of a man, and that's what you saw. And so they're just like, well, okay, well, they look around, but they're like, obviously there's nobody here. So they get back in the van and get back to, like, where they're going. They're still teasing Safi about, like, seeing a man in the road, and because nobody else saw him. And then all of a sudden, there very, very definitely is a man in the road, and the van hits him, like, face on, like, runs him over. And then the van goes, like, veering off the road and goes into, like, a ditch, and there's, like, a river type of thing. So all of the cops, like, you know, they all get out of the van. It's not, like, super deep, like, the water. And then they're all just like, what the fuck? Is everybody okay? And it seems like everybody's okay. But then they go, and there's these people, like, sitting around sort of like a camp type of situation. And they're all, like, really weird. And they're all kind of, like, looking at these cops, like, just suspiciously. I'm not really sure what the look is. It's just very, very unsettling. And they're basically like, oh, it had an accident, huh? And they're kind of, like, laughing at him about it. And also, they also have, like, a big bucket of frogs. So frogs are, like, a recurring, you know, theme in this movie. So at this point, the people, they're like, okay, well, where's this place that we're supposed to go? And they're like, oh, it's just through there. And one of them kind of, like, you know, helps them find where the place is. So when they get to where this place is, it's this big, creepy, abandoned building, obviously, because it has, like, ivy and shit growing all over the front of it. And there's a cop car in the front that there's nobody in. So they're like, well, they're assuming that this is the cop car that got there first and was calling for backup. So this is the place we're gonna go. So they're gonna go in there. And one of the guys comments that, oh, I remember hearing about this place when I was a child. Back in the Ottoman days, this used to be a police station, but nobody's been here for a really long time and it's abandoned now. Now, once they go into this house, that's where shit starts getting real hellraisery. I mean, okay, so they go in, and they're obviously looking for the other guys, like the other cops, like that called them, you know, for backup. And all they find is one dude who's kind of like over having a Blair Witch moment, like in one of the rooms. He's basically standing with his face to the wall, like it's concrete, this concrete bunkery type thing. And he's just like repeatedly banging his head against the concrete. And they try to talk to him, but he just is like fucking crying and making like weird groaning sounds, and he won't really tell them anything. Also, there's some weird shit going on with like these things that are hanging in there that almost look like, they look like they're made from kind of hair or meat or something, or like they look, you know, they look like somebody made them, like it's some kind of like talisman or some shit like that. So they're all that kind of shit like hanging around in there. And then while they're kind of looking around and they've separated, one of them, I think it's Safi, he like wanders off, and suddenly there's a whole bunch of naked, bloody people just like fucking each other, and they're torturing, there's people in cages, and there's people, like, cutting up other people. It's just, it gets, like, real fucking crazy, like, that. You know what I mean? So, and then, and he gets dragged off, and he's, like, screaming and everything like that. So then the rest of the movie is them in this place with all of these kind of, like, weird animalists. It's almost kind of like a demonic, I'm not sure what it is exactly. Like I said, it's almost kind of like a demonic cult or something like that. And the head of this demonic cult is this person, they call him, I think he's called the Father, or sometimes they call him Baba. And he's this kind of little, like, shorter dude who has this really, really, like, weird looking face. And he has, like, a keyhole, like, in the middle of his forehead. And he's, like, around his neck, he has, like, all these, like, padlocks and shit like that. Now, interestingly, that actor was not an actor. He was actually a guy that Kent Evernall had found. I think he worked in a, like, a car parking lot. Like, he was, like, a parking attendant or something. And he has some kind of, he had some kind of skin condition. And so, much like, you know, somebody like Michael Berryman or somebody like that was in The Hills Have Eyes, that had sort of like a strange look because of some kind of, you know, birth thing that happened at their birth or whatever, they're like, well, let's make that into a thing. Like, you know, so I guess, because the first time I saw this movie, I'm looking at that guy going, man, that is like a really weird looking dude. And I was like, that makeup looks amazing, or, you know, if... you know, it's obviously not CGI, but then I found out later that it's like, that's not makeup, that's that dude's actual face. So, he's very, you know, I know I can't help looking like that, but it's a little unsettling. So essentially what this might be, and like I said, when it gets to this point, if you're squeamish, like, do not watch this part, because I mean, people's intestines get pulled out, like, just right in close up, just woo, pulling them out. People's eyes get gouged out, like, close up. There's a whole thing where, like, Yavuz, after his eyes get gouged out, he's forced to, like, rape this woman that's like, wearing an animal head. And then she, like, gives birth to some weird baby thing that I'm not really even sure what it's made of. It looks like kind of like a pork roast. I don't even know what it is. It's, like, this fucking crazy-ass thing. So it's, like, all kind of, like, nasty shit ensues during this thing. I mean, what I got from this was that it's basically, like... And it's weird, too, because, like, in between, like, all of this gory shit, every now and then, they have a scene where they go back to Arda and Boss Ramsey, and they'll be, like, in the restaurant where they were at the beginning, and they're having, like, a conversation about dreams, usually. And one of those scenes, actually, and I think I wrote about this on my blog a while back, like, the first time that I saw it, and one of those scenes actually really reminded me of the Winky's Diner scene from Mulholland Drive, the David Lynch movie, because it's kind of like what you find out during one of these kind of weird dreamlike, like, interstitials is that Arda, who, like I said, was the kid in the nightmare at the beginning, he is telling Boss Ramsey about that nightmare that he had when he was a kid. And basically what it was, he's like, I used to have this little friend back when I was like 10 or whatever. And we were coming home one night and his dad had just died. And so we were kind of talking about death. And we made this agreement that if one of us died before the other one, we would try to visit the other one, like, as a ghost, but without scaring them. So he's like, so we had that conversation, and then my friend got on the ferry to go home, and he's like, and I went home, and then I couldn't get to sleep. And then he's like, and then when I did go to sleep, I had a dream that all of these people were, like, looking at me, and they were, like, glaring at me. And then his little friend, like, came out of the crowd and said, I'm here, don't be afraid. And then he basically says that the next day he found out that his little friend had died. He'd been, like, hit by a car. So that was actually his friend. Like, because he said that red light coming on, that he knew that his friend was in the room and he was going to see him like a ghost. But even though he had told him he wouldn't be afraid, he was still afraid. So he said that was a recurring nightmare that he had. So basically between that, and then it gets, like, really surreal. Like, blood comes out from under his hands, and then he's, like, underwater, and there's, like, a big giant hand, like, coming at him. Like, the imagery in this is really, really awesome. And like I said, that's kind of where it gives me a very surrealist, like, Lynchian kind of vibe, because it really has all this nightmare, this dreamlike kind of imagery. And if you're... you know, if you want, like, a real literal interpretation of it, it's, you know, it kind of defies that a little bit, but everything in there kind of makes sense in a weird sort of way. I've also seen this compared to Lucio Fulci, particularly The Beyond, which it does have a little bit of that kind of vibe too, just because it's this just weird surrealist kind of thing with all this like crazy gore in it. So, I mean, if that's kind of like your jam, then you'll probably be into this. Like I said, it's very, very Clive Barker-y also. And Kan Afrinal has said that that Clive Barker was a big influence on this movie in particular. But yeah, so what we're led to believe is happening is that either, because there's a thing where Baba tells them that hell isn't a place you go, it's something you carry around with you like all the time. So you're kind of led to believe that all of this stuff that's happening inside of this house or, you know, this place is sort of like some kind of judgment or some kind of like purgatorial test or something like that. Because what actually ends up happening later on is that pretty much all of the dudes get killed except for Arda. Because we're meant to think that perhaps because we've seen Arda's dreams like as a kid and everything like that, that we're kind of seeing everything from Arda's perspective, that this is kind of like his story or his journey or whatever, or his dream. Because like I said, this movie, I feel like it's kind of like a dream within a dream within a dream. It's one of those kind of situations. So even when he's going back and forth, like talking to Boss Ramsey about the dream and stuff, I think that's a dream too. And I think them going to the house is a not necessarily a dream, but they've just been like pulled off this road. There's a lot of references to like roads and journeys and things like that. So this is almost kind of like, it's like a descent into hell sort of situation, and it could be also like some kind of judgment situation, and that maybe Arda was the only one that was quote-unquote pure enough to have gone through here unscathed, because he's the only one that doesn't get killed. And what ends up happening, interestingly, is that Boss Rendy, who they establish later on, is actually Arda's caretaker, because I guess Arda's parents died like a year after his little friend died, like in the situation he described earlier. And Boss Ramsey, who I think was his uncle or just like a family friend or something, like took over his care. So he's actually been raising Arda. And so he's kind of like his father figure. So even before they go into the abandoned house, Boss Ramsey says something which seems meaningless at the time, but he says, I have the key to everything that's going on here. But what ends up happening is that at the end, when Baba is killing all the other cops, like in various horrifying ways, he actually like takes and like saws Boss Ramsey's throat open. And then it pops back to like a restaurant, the restaurant again, and Arda and Boss Ramsey are the only people there. Boss Ramsey basically says, you're seeing them too. So Baba, from what I can understand, like I said, I don't know a lot about like kind of this Turkish folklore and stuff like that this is based on, but I think Baba is supposed to be Tarum Baba, who is sort of like a dream demon, and his thing is like he takes children. So we're led to believe that this is all kind of happening in a dream state, and it's almost like a purgatorial type of situation where Boss Ramsey has seen them, and it's almost kind of like they came to claim him, but because Arda was there, Boss Ramsey almost kind of like sacrificed himself, because he actually drew Baba away from Arda and was like, yeah, come take me instead. So he cuts his throat open, and Arda finds a key inside Boss Ramsey's neck, like in the wound, and he sticks it in Baba's head, like in the keyhole tattoo on his forehead, and that kind of like kills him. So Arda gets away, but then at the very end, there's like this weird like time loop thing where Arda gets away and he's like all covered in blood and he's like laughing like maniacally or whatever, and then he runs into the road like looking for help, and a van comes around the corner and straight up runs him over. And then they show the van going into the river just like the cop van did at the beginning, although now the cop van is empty. So we're led to believe that this whole night, it's been some kind of weird time loop, and it's almost kind of like Arda, because he is almost kind of like the savior figure. At least that's how I took it. Like, I think that there was this whole purgatorial thing, like their souls were kind of in some kind of purgatory, but because Arda was pure, and he was able to he was not only able to kill Baba, but by sacrificing himself, he saved the other souls, maybe. That's kind of like the read that I'm getting off it. But like I said, I could be totally off on it. If you guys have seen it and you have any theories about it, but that's what made the most sense to me, because it seemed very much like a nightmare purgatory situation. And he kind of like freed all the other guys, like all the other souls, because you know, because of him doing this time loop or breaking the loop. Maybe they'd been in this loop for a really long time or something like that. So if you have not seen this movie, this, like I said, this is one of my favorite ones that I've seen. It was one that I had on the list because I'm like, okay, I gotta do that one, because I remember seeing that back in 2016. I'm like, man, that was so great. And it just seemed like there's so much going on in there. Like I said, the imagery, the way it's shot is just really... Man, and like I said, I can't even put my finger on it, but like just the use of color and lighting, and it's all, it's just so, so creepy. It just has, even when nothing seems to be happening, that's all this, like I said, you know, like a frog in a soap dish, it's like it doesn't sound like all that creepy, but like in the movie, it's super, super creepy. And it's like, I don't think this movie has a single jump scare in it, really, other than maybe like the guy, you know, being in front of the van or whatever. It's just this really great atmosphere of dread, and it's just so oppressive. And even if you don't know exactly what's going on, you know that there's something going on and that it's like nightmare logic. And it's just, I don't know, it's just one of the best ones that I saw from the 2010s easily. And it's, you know, one of the ones that stuck out the most to me, that I remembered the most. So I was really glad that I got to like revisit it for this. And I really, really recommend it. Not if you're squeamish, like I said, because it's very, very gory. And it's, there's a lot of weird fucked up sex shit in it. And, you know, so it, yeah, so there's like intestines, eye gougings, they're all kind of like crazy shit like that. So if that's going to bother you, then probably not. Also, it's very surreal. It's not narratively, I was going to say it's narratively incoherent. It's not incoherent, but it jumps back and forth sometimes. It's like, you know, was, oh, we're in a van accident. Oh, and now we're suddenly back in the restaurant again. But it's all like really creepy and weird. So like I said, just approach it as though this is a nightmare inside a nightmare inside a nightmare. Or like I said, it's kind of like a purgatory type of story. Like I said, it's almost kind of like, it didn't occur to me at first, but when I saw somebody else, like somebody else reviewed it and they kind of compared it to Lucio Fulci, like particularly The Beyond, I was like, yeah, I can see it's not exactly like that, but I can see where that comparison comes from. This one was a lot darker, grittier. There was something more going on in this one. Like I said, it almost had like a Lynchian vibe in some of the kind of scenes. But this is just, I loved this movie so much. I know, I don't know, I saw like a lot of other reviews, and a lot of other horror reviewers really seemed to dig it, but a couple other people just couldn't, they weren't down with the narrative thing, and they're just like, what the fuck was going on? Like, I didn't get it, or, you know, I didn't know what it all meant. Although to me, like watching it a second time, it seemed much clearer that this was some kind of, that this was all Arda's dream, and it was some kind of symbolic journey that he was going on that would end with him sacrificing himself to save the souls of others. That was what I got out of it. I'm not entirely sure if that's what the intention was. Ken Evernall has said that even though it's kind of based in mythological tropes and stuff, he basically said he based it on a nightmare that he had had, so that it didn't necessarily have to make sense, but it's one of those ones that I think you can project your own meaning onto it in a way, although it seemed a lot more, I'm not going to say straightforward because it's not, but it seemed a lot less weird to me the second time I watched it, because I had seen it before, I picked up on a lot of like things in the dialogue and like symbolism and stuff, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, I see what you're talking about there, because I had totally like missed stuff that Boss Ramsey said earlier in the movie about the key and all this other kind of stuff. I had totally missed that. So it was nice to like watch it again and like pick up on all the stuff I missed. But this is definitely one that needs a few repeat viewings. But as I said, if you have not seen it and you really want to see some weird, creepy, crazy, bonkers movie, this one's a really, really good one. I really dug it. And like I said, I don't think it's on Netflix anymore, unfortunately, but there are a bunch of other streaming services where you can find it. I was able to find it pretty easily. So definitely check it out if you like weird-ass horror movies and super gory horror movies, because this is a pretty intense one. And let me know what you thought about it in the comments, and we'll have a discussion about it. And that'll do it for this Flickers of Fear, and I'll see you guys on the next one. Bye.